Accession number 30249, Reel 5.
Gordon Rushmer, Reel 5. Yes, I think we're still in Kosovo, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you were saying some very interesting things about how you were developing really as a war artist.
Yes.
You know, in coming.
Yes.
Meeting
yes.
these new challenges.
I mean, I sort of feel I probably found my feet in Kosovo, really. I suddenly, well, there was a realisation that I could do the job, which hadn't really dawned on me before. Not, I suddenly thought, yes, I can really, I can cope with this, and I know, I now, now I begin to see what it's about, and I begin to know what I can do, what part I can play in all this, you know.
I suppose you were getting confidence, really, in the
and you do need to be confident, you know, not only in being able to produce the painting afterwards, but you've got to be confident to be in there and live with it, really, you know, and experience it. It's not the arena for weaknesses, you know. You don't.
Would you have found it more difficult without that training in the med?
I think I would have done, yes. I mean, for a start, I met one or two people that I already knew, you know, so you, and this happens all along, you go to a new theatre of war and you meet old friends quite often, you know. I mean, because I work mainly for Marines, you're bound to run into the same people. Quite often, you know, they keep going everywhere, these guys. yes, well, I did this. I did the stay in Pristina, and I did all the patrols in Pristina, and then it was decided that I should go north to the border of the British sector, which was also the border with Serbia. And they thought if they took me. Up to the border, I could have a little look into Serbia, and see a few more people, some of whom would be Muslims, because at that stage the north of Kosovo still had quite a few Muslims dotted around. So I was driven up to Podijevo. Podijevo is quite close to the border with Serbia, and I was put with the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment for a day, are made up of my father's old regiment, Royal Hampshire, as they became, and then the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment. So I was with them for a day, and they showed me around, and they took me on the obligatory foot patrol through the town, because it's the best way to see what's about, really. And they took me and introduced me to two old ladies that they christened the Serb Grannies. And when the British had taken over the sector, they had discovered that in Podijevo there were two little old ladies, both Serbs, who had refused to be moved out by the Albanians. Absolutely no way they were going. Everybody else, all the other Serbs left, fled north. These two little old ladies said, no way, this is our home, we've always lived here, we're staying put. Well, the Brits discovered that the Albanians had decided that they were going to kill these little two harmless old ladies. They didn't want any Muslims there at all. Sorry, didn't want any Serbs there at all. So it was decided very quickly that they would protect these little ladies. So a guard was mounted on their homes 24 hours a day, all the time the British were there. And the little ladies survived. And they've only just last year gone back, they finally relented and gone back into Serbia. But they stuck it out for several years. And I produced, because I visited these ladies in their homes, and I painted one of the little old ladies, and I also visited the other lady in a block of flats, and as we left, I came down the stairs into this passageway, and I saw two soldiers silhouetted against the doorway, and there was another painting right in front of me. So I quick clicked with the camera and then told them to hold it where, you know, and I walked around them and took a few more photographs. But it was exactly, it could have been a setup. It wasn't a setup, it was just how they were, and it was absolutely perfect. And it summed up that afternoon in Kosovo, because it was cold and snowy and miserable.
You can feel the cold,
yeah,
in that,
and these lads were just standing there doing the job, you know. And I talked to the two guards, and said, "So what do you think, standing here all day and half the night looking after these old ladies?" And they said, "Well, A, that's what we're told to do, but more importantly, we want to do it. We don't see why these Albanians should go around killing old ladies just for the hell of it. They've done nobody any harm." They were very matter of fact, but also very determined and very positive that they were doing the right thing at the time. And the British would have moved out of that sector and somebody else would have taken over, but they all guarded these ladies and kept them safe, which is lovely. And it's one of those little stories that would never have gotten into the press, you know. And the fact that they christened them, everybody, wherever I go, if I say, you know, if I ask after the Serb grannies, everybody knows. In the business, everybody knows who I'm talking about, you know. Which was wonderful. Just an insight into the detail that we sometimes, and the care that we take sometimes. And Brits are very good at that. You wouldn't find the Americans probably taking that much care over people, I don't think.
You were saying they kept out of it, they marched these patrols.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm. Yeah, the Americans were way down the other end of the country. And didn't seem very keen to expose themselves to any danger at all.
And your troops there, your lovely guards, mm. your silhouette, but they don't seem to be overladen with equipment.
No,
you know,
no.
Body armour and helmets. It's soft hats, I think.
Soft hats.
It?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We have this. The Brits and the Dutch certainly. I don't know about other nationalities, but as soon as you can dispense with the hard hat, you do. Because we're great believers in making friends, in not threatening. Don't use threatening behaviour. And helmets and goggles and things like that are threatening. And we quite often take, you know, considerable risks by not wearing helmets. But the Marines especially, you know, very proud of, and the Paras, very proud of their berets, for goodness sake, you know. And that berry goes on at the earliest opportunity, because we're Marines or we're Paras, you know. So, yeah, we always try and take up that sort of non-threatening stance, really. And quite right, too. You don't want to antagonise people any more than you have to. While I was in Podievo, Princess of Wales Royal Regiment decided to take me right onto the border, and they took me up to the border in a Warrior armoured personnel carrier. I mean, you're relatively safe in an armoured personnel carrier, although you put your head out the top, you're not so safe, you know. The driver's exposed all the time, and I mean, drivers had got shot driving those things during that well, mainly I suppose in Bosnia rather than Kosovo, but you are a bit exposed as a driver, because you can only see where you're going by looking out of that front hatch. They took me up to the border, and we ran around in the armoured personnel carrier. They drove it up and down, and I took photographs of it, and we played with this thing, really, which was great fun. It was a nice afternoon.
What was the border like? You know, how was it? How was the demarcation?
Well, there was the main road through from Pristina to Belgrade, I suppose. Had a border post, on our side, we had sangers with sentries and weapons, and plenty of razor wire. And then there was a border post 100 metres down the road where the Serb guards. So I mean, it was a well marked border, but traffic was coming backwards and forwards. And in fact, what I was wanting to get round to really was that a couple of days after I travelled this road up to the border and back, a bus came south from Serbia into Kosovo carrying families who were going to visit the graves of wounded relatives, of killed relatives. And the bus came down past where we were playing, and about 2 kilometres south, it went over a manhole cover under which a bomb had been planted, and there were apparently two fellas on the hill, waited till the bus went over the manhole cover and pressed the button, and the bus went up.
And these would have been full of Serbs returning,
just coming down, yeah, to put flowers on graves and things. And it was a devastating explosion. And the local hospital in Podjevo, that was by then staffed with Albanians, refused to take any of the wounded. So we had to, the Brits had to organise an evacuation by helicopter of all the wounded down to Pristina, to the hospital. And that horrified me. Even doctors and nurses. That's real hate, isn't it? Perhaps we're seeing it in this last 10 days in this country.
Yes, it reminds one of
bombings and etc. You know, that was awful. I didn't see it. A lot of people were quite upset about it. I mean, the fact that, you know, you can't even use the available hospital, closest hospital, I mean, that's quite appalling. But that's war, you know. I mean, I'm always saying to myself, well, but that's war. You know, people fight, you know, people hate. And that's one of the results of it, really. But when I got back to Pristina, I visited the hospital. The tented field hospital, and I've got to the point where I'm actually studying war artists and people that have done the job before, for some reason I suddenly realised that I really needed to paint wounded people. Very, very sort of morbid subject, but anyway, so I got taken into this hospital, and there was a hospital full of people with burns and fractures and all sorts of things, and I did some work in the hospital, and it's quite challenging stuff actually, to sit in front of somebody whose face has been well and truly scorched, or you know, a man with a chest drain in who's got blast injuries. I had to pluck up the courage, A, to ask, and then to sit down and work, you know. But they were delightful people. I didn't speak their language. They didn't speak my language. But they were quite happy for me to sit there and draw and take photographs, and no problem whatsoever. In fact, the gentleman with the chest drain, he chatted away to me in his language, and I chatted away to him in my language, and we nodded and grinned, and it was lovely. It was really lovely.
This one looks like a child.
Yeah.
A youth.
He was probably 20, I suppose. Something like that. But I just knew I had to do it. This was part of my growing up as an artist, really, you know. It would have been very easy to walk past and shudder, and you know, but it was important that I did it rather than that anyone else saw it afterwards, you know. But I show them and people, you know, they respond, which is good. But these...
Yes, Lily, you're giving a record, aren't you? I mean, yeah. This what you've produced here is the story.
Yes, yeah.
Of the aftermath.
It's not very glamorous.
And yet, you know, there is this terrible beauty, isn't there, in war art?
Yes, beauty and great challenges that lead, you know, it's there to be painted. So I try and I do my best with it. But after that, I had completed my work really in Kosovo. I'd got plenty of material. I was taken to Obilić. Obilić had a power station, a coal-fired power station, which seemed to be polluting the whole of Kosovo. And alongside the power station, there were underground, barely underground coal mines. And the coal mines were all on fire, so wherever you drove there was smoke coming up through the ground and up through the road. And these were, I mean, underground fires like that burned for years, you know, no way they could put them out. So and the air for miles and miles around was just blue with coal smoke, you know, very unhealthy place, dreadful place. But that was my final view of Kosovo.
Was there much? You were saying in Pristina, there wasn't much destruction. But going to the up to the border.
Yes, I mean towards the border, there was a lot more destruction. I mean, I did some work around a railway station that had been completely demolished by a battle. A lot of ruined buildings. I mean, the city got off quite light, really, but outside, yeah, there was evidence of all sorts of skirmishes and things, you know.
Did you get any idea while you were there of how much damage was done by NATO, the bombing?
No,
compared with, you know, would there be any way you would have known?
No, apart from buildings hit by missiles. That was the only evidence I saw of damage inflicted by us. But we must have beat the place up quite considerably, you know. I mean, I know we also attacked a lot of their Serb tank columns. They were pulling out as we moved forward. The Serbs were trying to move all their armour north. And there was a story, in fact, it was on the news that a French officer was going to briefings and then reporting to the Serbs on our bombing plans for the next 24 hours. So the Serbs were quite well briefed on what our plans were. And they would take their columns of vehicles up through Pristina, and there's a big tunnel in Pristina, the Dardania tunnel. And they, when they knew there was a raid, they would race for the tunnel with their tanks or artillery or whatever and park them in the tunnel and wait for the raid to, you know, our Air Force couldn't find them, you know. So when the raid's over, then they'd travel further north again, you know, but thanks to the French, you know. Or one Frenchman in particular, but again, you never know who your friends are.
This lovely, I say lovely painting, it's a lovely painting, but it's very sad because it's a substantial building, a house, I would think.
It's part of a railway station.
Is it?
Yes. Really? Yeah, it was probably the ticket office, I would think.
Yes.
But boy, do they make lovely subjects.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I thought...
It's ironic, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, I got to thinking about people like... who was painting buildings in the last war? John Piper, I suppose, more than anyone. I mean, I mean, he was quite an inspiration when I wanted to paint ruined buildings, you know. Go and look at John Piper and see how he tackled the problem.
Yes, it's
you
got
know.
Echoes of
yes,
that
yes,
definitely,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've learned from quite a lot of these people as I've gone on. Really, it's useful to see how other artists have tackled the same problem.
Yes.
You know, and what how they've modified their techniques.
Yes.
Chosen their subjects, etc. So, I mean, that's a whole subject on its own, really, looking at studying war artists, you know.
Do you find you look at more war art now? You
I do.
Older?
Yeah. I mean, I look at more war art than anything else these days. It's got something to do with, I mean, war artists are at the cutting edge, aren't they, really, as far as I'm concerned.
And are there others apart from John Piper?
Yeah, there are. I've got a little list here which I prepared, actually, because I have some...
That's good of you.
I have some people here that are very important to me. Eric Revilius is the first one. And there was an exhibition of his work at the Imperial War Museum probably 2 years ago. And that really... that opened my eyes. I mean, he was a watercolourist for a start, which pleased me hugely, because I've most of my work, not all of it, but most of my war work has been produced in watercolour, because I've always believed that you can do anything with watercolour. It's not as light and instant as people sometimes say. Watercolour can really be used to good effect. And I was so pleased to see so much watercolour work by Revilius, and what impressed me was the size. I mean, most of his pieces were full sheet watercolours, so they were 20 by 30 inches. I mean, big pieces, and that set me thinking, because I, until that stage, I'd not been working quite that big, and I suddenly thought, well, he did it, I must be able to do it. And I must do it, you know, because they have, that size of painting has presence. So I then started to think about working at that size, doing what I call major watercolours, in actual fact, rather than something that's, well, when they're smaller, they always look a bit lightweight, but you get to a full sheet, you know, it becomes a real test of your technique for a start.
Because you can't make mistakes with watercolours.
No, it's unforgiving stuff. But that's half the fun of it, really, is, you know, not letting it beat you and planning it. You know, I mean, watercolours have to be planned. Oils, you can put it on and take it off and move it around, but watercolour has to be thought through, planned out, and then you sort of hold your breath and hope to goodness it works, you know. But he was a master, a superb draftsman again. So I went to that exhibition twice, actually, and learnt hugely from the men. Then I've got Richard Urich again, because of his sheer dedication to the job and his painterly skill. I mean, a modern master, and I still don't think he's recognised yet. Hopefully one day he will be. I mean, too late for him, but a breathtaking painter, really wonderful man. And I also found an Australian painter called Ivor Healy, who was painting the Second World War, and he was an official war artist and went in with the boys into battle armed with his paintbrush and his paper, and produced some fantastic work. And so gutsy and so real. And again, if he hadn't been there, he couldn't have come up with the goods, you know. Another valuable lesson, really. And then I've also got John Singer Sargent, who everybody's familiar with. A lot of people are probably not so familiar with his watercolours, but I really think his watercolours are his best pieces. That's probably probably heresy. I mean, the watercolours he did during the First World War are superb. I mean, lovely things of Highlanders picking apples and resting against walls, and just beautiful, so well seen, you know. And again, he was there on the spot and picked up on these quiet moments. And it's quite often the quiet moments that are the most telling, I think, in this job. Anybody can paint smoke and flames and stuff, but you know, the quiet moments when the guys are recovering from an operation, or you know, are exhausted and they're just sitting there with a cigarette and nodding off, those are the, then you catch them, you know, and then you see what it's all about, you know. And yes, Hart Sargent was a great painter. There's an American I admire, Joseph Hirsch, who was a superb painter in oils and watercolour, but his watercolours are just a bit wonderful. I mean, there's so many good people, aren't there, really? You know, it's difficult to narrow it down.
Was he World War II?
Yeah. Yeah, lovely things. Did paintings of hospital ships and corpses and injured people and fighters. I mean, he did the whole thing, really. Caught everything. Wonderful technician, and done in a painted in a very traditional way, but with great strength. And they really live. And then I have Thomas Hennell. And Thomas Hennell has a lot of work, I think, in the Imperial War Museum collection. Probably it runs into hundreds of sketches and paintings, I suspect. And I have two Thomas Hennells in my collection. They're not war pieces; they are from the 1930s. But I'm really pleased to have a couple of Thomas Hennell sketches. And there was a man who just wanted to get into it, who was turned down by the commissioning authorities. They didn't think he was up to the job, and he eventually volunteered to go for no pay. And so then they agreed, and he went in for no pay, and it appears he'd agreed that everything he did would be handed over to the authorities, which duly happened. And then he got killed in action in Sumatra at the end of the war. Quite tragic, really, but again a lovely spontaneous painter, quite sketchy, quite light with his work, but again very telling stuff. And now of course he's rated as one of the great war artists, you know. And as far as I can tell, he never got a penny for it, which annoys me intensely. It really does. And then H.A. Freeth is the final one on my list. I mean, it could go on and on. And really, all I say about him is a superb draftsman, and that says it all, you know. But again, there's that thread of draftsmanship running right through. They could all draw beautifully, and that's the basis of the job, you know. All you can hang paint, you can hang bad paint on good drawing. But, so I study these fellows all the time, bedtime reading.
And more so since you've been, yeah, you know, you've become a war artist.
Yes, yes. I mean, I knew very little about these people, really, until I started to delve, you know. And you start when